Now, thank you very much. Well, just to introduce myself, the Office of Tax Simplification, as you know, is an independent office within the Treasury whose purpose is to provide advice to the Chancellor on simplifying the tax system. And I've been with the office for 3 weeks. I thought, though, particularly as Mark has explained the rules, that we might begin with a case study. So I'll outline a very simple set of facts, and then I'm going to ask you to advise me whether you feel this person is employed or self-employed. And I'm going to pick a very common example. So Nick, who is employed in the local pub, comes to my house once a week on a Tuesday morning for 3 hours to clean the house. He's only allowed to come on a Tuesday morning because Tuesday night is bridge night in my house, and we want the house looking good on a Tuesday. He's not allowed to send his brother because he's a layabout, and we certainly don't want any of those other people from the pub. We only want Nick, who's a good, hard-working individual. Now, he's only been ill once, and we felt a bit sorry for him, so we paid him for the week he missed. And because we're generous people, we allow him to take a couple of weeks' holiday every year, and we pay him for the 2 weeks that he's missed as well as over Christmas. We provide, obviously, all the materials and equipment he needs, except that he's a bit fussy about a couple of very fancy mops, and so he insists on bringing mops to our house, which we don't mind, they're very effective. So is he employed or self-employed? Perhaps we could take a show of hands. Would anyone who feels that he's self-employed please raise a hand? And anyone who feels he's employed, please raise a hand. And anyone who really doesn't know, please raise a hand. Well, it's very interesting because I think we have assembled today a particularly fine collection of tax professionals and economists. And all I can say from the show of hands is that we are confused as to whether he's employed or not. And I had a look at the HMRC tool, which is called the Check Employment Status for Tax tool, which you can pull up on your iPhone. And that indicated that if he really doesn't need to bring the mops, he's probably employed. If he does need to bring the mops, he's probably self-employed. It depends whether he brings, in this particular fact pattern, whether he brings his own equipment. Now, looking for further inspiration, I went on to the HMRC website and I put in cleaner in the search box. And only one piece of advice emerged, and that was how to apply for a licence to a Scottish local authority to become an authorised window cleaner. So that wasn't terribly helpful either. So I think the role of the Office of Tax Simplification is to propose measures which enable ordinary people to know where they stand and to do what they need to do with the tax system. And clearly in relation to at least cleaners, there's some way to go. But what I principally wanted to say, and I'll do it rather briefly, is to say that the OTS has done a huge amount of work in this area, which is absolutely worth reading and studying and thinking about as further pieces of work are going forward. Now, I can say this in the knowledge that I have nothing to do with any of this work. I've been there 3 weeks. But the team at the OTS, led by John Whiting for the last 6 years, and three of our colleagues are here in the audience, David, Rebecca, Marion are in the audience, have done a fantastic job on these projects, and I thoroughly recommend a careful reading. And they touch on all the issues which we've raised today. We have produced reports on employee benefits and expenses, employment status, which I'll come back to in a moment, a recent focus paper on the gig economy, I'll come back to that in a moment, but also on small business taxation, share schemes, competitiveness, and not listed here, look-through entities for small incorporated businesses, sole enterprise protected assets for people who wish to protect the assets but still remain as a self-employed individual, and many other reports which I haven't got time to go through here. The one that is particularly germane to our discussion is the employment status report published in March 2015. This was a 183-page report, very well researched and evidenced. All the evidence suggested that this was a problem due to changing work patterns. It was getting worse. There were two routes to improvement: tackling the definitions, which as we've seen is very difficult, or changing the rules that take the heat out of the issue through alignment. Either way, and this is a recurring theme, I think we've heard this already and I'll repeat it again, it requires joint working with government departments beyond the Treasury and HMRC, the Department of Work and Pensions, the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, and all those involved in employment rights, in benefit entitlements, and all the other aspects which other speakers have touched upon. And they all need to be looked at in the round. So the Employment Status Project recognised that there are changing work patterns, issues of tax law, employment law, benefits entitlement, a huge amount of interest. There were something in the region of 340 responses to the consultation, 70 meetings, raising some of the questions listed on the slide. The background findings were that there is no easy solution, and no simple answers. People work in many different ways. We'll come back in the gig economy to recognise that some people may have multiple employments and multiple self-employments and coupled with gigs. Businesses have different reasons for engaging people on different bases. It's not always the right answer for a small business to have people in employment, for example. People have different lifestyles. The retired company executive who has a portfolio of highly paid consultancies is in a very different position from perhaps a low paid individual with a 0 hours contract and a number of precarious employment. We did look at international comparisons. I didn't have time to go through them now, but again, I would say in the report are some very interesting descriptions of how other countries deal with these issues. And the direct solutions to the problems that were proposed in the paper include better guidance, more rulings. In fact, I perhaps made a slight joke of the HMRC tool. Didn't mean to do that. It's a very good tool and will provide a very clear answer in the vast majority of cases. And it's clear, it's easy to use, and I think it's a well-constructed tool. Should we have a statutory employment test, or should we rely on the rather complex set of tests we have at the moment? Difficult question. Come back to income tax and NIC in just a second. The big question that people were asking then, and I think we're asking now, should we harmonise the rules governing employment status for tax, for minimum wage, benefits, auto-enrolment, employment rights, and other purposes? One argument is that if we harmonise the definitions right across the board, it's simpler for people to know where they are. And the other argument is that each of these regimes has different policy objectives and different purposes. They may therefore not be amenable to a simple set of definitions applying in the same way to all of them. I'll just add that there has been a joint working group, and that is absolutely the right way to take these issues forward. And we feel that we should continue to work on these issues in a joint and collaborative way. Longer term, a number of ideas. I won't list them all here, but except to refer at the bottom to employers' national insurance contributions, seen at the time as the elephant in the room, clearly only applicable in the case of an employment and not in the case of self-employed. Well, the OTS has done a great deal of work on income tax and national insurance contributions alignment. Now, everybody agrees, I think, that there should be more alignment of definitions of some of the rules. The national insurance contribution regime is out of date, arguably. It doesn't reflect current working practices. And a simpler and fairer system would treat everyone's earnings in the same way. Now, this report was an 88-page report, again, very well researched, thoroughly investigated by the OTS team with the help of a very large number of stakeholders. And a number of proposals were put forward, including, for example, moving national insurance contributions onto an annual basis instead of the weekly or monthly basis. If they were moved onto an annual basis, really large numbers of people would be affected. So part-time individuals, women, those under 35, would generally gain. Those earning more than £20,000, multi-jobbers, would pay more. But very large numbers of people, which is why it all needs to be thought through very carefully. In fact, moving to an annual, cumulative and aggregated basis, which is one of the core proposals, would result in 7 million people paying less and 6 million people paying more. And one wouldn't embark on such a measure without thinking it through very carefully. Now, there was a seven-stage plan for closer alignment. I won't again list all the steps just now, but this was seen as something which would be achieved over a period of years, and in the report we set out a sort of phased approach to implementing the seven steps. I'd like to briefly touch on the gig economy focus paper, which we issued, looking at, well, the gig economy goes much broader than employment, self-employment, different forms of relationship with workers, to platforms, assets, and all sorts of other things. But in relation to the tax impacts resulting from the gig economy, we thought about the impact for five sets of stakeholders. So for individuals, for example, the relationship between additional income and benefits, when particular allowances might apply. For the exchequer, it's important to recognise that more people working in a particular form can have an impact on employers and employees' NIC and more collection risk. Obviously, if a company employs 100 people and operates a pay-as-you-earn scheme, collection is fairly secure. If it only employs 5 people and have 95 people on some other status who are responsible for looking after their own tax affairs, then the task of ensuring compliance and collection is very much more complex. What are the responsibilities of a platform provider? Should they provide more help to the platform users to ensure that the right tax is accounted for at the right time? Can we do this through technology or software? What about the employment intermediaries legislation? Can we, as I think Mark was suggesting, apply this more widely than we do at the moment? What is the role of quarterly reporting? And for the hirer, when do we expect to pay gross and when do we expect to pay net? Perhaps going back to the cleaner example, if we know for sure that Nick has a fairly full-time job in the pub and we think he's unemployed, then in fact we ought to be operating a pay-as-you-earn scheme, at least accounting for national insurance contributions. So what should be the reporting obligations on ordinary people entering into ordinary engagements? And for HMRC, clearly a lot of work in informing taxpayers, a lot of work in engaging with taxpayers, and a great deal potentially of administration cost, unless we can help more people to help themselves. So in summary, the OTS has done a huge amount of work. Thoroughly recommend having a look on the website where all the reports are there. This subject has been addressed by the team in very great detail. And some of the conclusions are that this is a very complex issue and a very broad issue, and as other speakers have said, we need to look at all aspects, the employment law aspects, the tax aspects, the benefit entitlement aspects, and others, in order to come to a well-rounded view. And thank you very much for your advice. I now know what to do with Nick Pekina.